Welcome back to Unstable and Unbridled. This is Liz.
And I'm Rachel.
And we have a very cool guest here today. This is Alexa, and she is working currently at Canterbury Racetrack in Shakopee. Right?
Yes.
Shakopee, Minnesota.
Yeah, you guys call it Shakopee. Or what do you say? Shakopee. I call it Shakopee.
Shakopee?
I'm not from here, but they all call
Shakopee.
It
Shakopee.
Shakopee.
Is that why you call it Shakopee?
I say it wrong.
And she is an agent.
Yeah, a jockey agent.
A jockey agent. And so we're going to talk all about racehorses, and we're sorry we haven't potted in a while, so we'll do an update at some point. But for now, we're going to talk about racehorses and everything involved with them.
What is a jockey agent? Let's start at the basics.
So it's kind of like being a sports agent. So 99% of the jockeys have an agent who represents them, and that agent selects their mounts for the races and talks to the trainers and just handles all their business. I got my start galloping. I was in college. I went to University of Kentucky, and before class, I'd gallop in the mornings. And then I became an assistant trainer for the guy that I was galloping for, and ended up traveling the country and working as an assistant for many years.
What does that like mean to be an assistant trainer working for someone? Like, you go to all the different races, or?
Yeah, so it kind of actually can depend based on who you work. Some trainers rely more heavily on their assistants than others. Sometimes it's just like being a right-hand man, and sometimes it's acting as the trainer yourself. So there were situations in which I would be at a track and I would have 50 horses under my care, my supervision. So I acted as the trainer for the people that I worked for. So I was really able to gain a lot of knowledge and experience.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, that sounds
scary. Yeah, a lot of work, a lot of hours, which is sort of why I became an agent, because I wanted time for my riding horses.
Yeah. So when you were doing that assistant trainer job, like, you manage the people who come in and like feed them and clean the stalls, or you're doing all of that, or how does that work?
So in my most recent assistant job, I was in Texas. I had 58 horses. I had about 12 people working for me in the form of grooms, exercise riders, hot walkers. So I was managing. The people are the hard part. The horses are easy.
Yeah, always.
Right?
Truth. Truth be told.
Yeah.
Preach.
But it was just everything. And then the trainer himself was actually at a different racetrack managing a different string of horses. So I really, you know, acted as a trainer, which was nice because I really got the feel of it. And it sort of let me know if that's what I wanted to do or not.
What does a racehorse trainer do? I mean, I know what Bob Baffert does, but what do the rest do?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know what people say.
Yeah, no comment.
PC.
Yeah, the trial's ongoing. It can depend, again, because there's some trainers that are more hands-on than others, but I would say that the best trainers that I've worked for have been very hands-on and are in the barn every day eyeing their horses, and their job, the hard part of their job is interacting with the owners, because, like, again, you know, the people are the hard part of the job, and talking to the owners and convincing them of this and that is probably what's the hardest part of the job.
Oh, this needs to be done, or that needs
to
be done,
or we're
going to change this.
Exactly. But in terms of a day-to-day thing, making their training schedule, whether it's galloping, jogging, how far, breezing, choosing the right races they're going to run at. So that's the day-to-day care, not super glamorous.
So I found it interesting, because I don't know that much about the track or what actually happens there, and getting to know you this summer, like, learning about all the different things from, like, being an owner to a trainer to the jockey to the exercise rider to being an agent, which I didn't even know that was a thing until I met you.
Same.
And then, like, I have friends that work with racehorses, but it's not at a track. So they work at, like, a private farm that has an exercise track, but they're not actually racing the horses there. So they just exercise ride and, like, teach the babies and trot them in the paddocks. And, like, just, like, learning about how things are done with the racehorses is, you know, it's just another horse sport that is somewhat similar but so different, I think, from, like, how other sports are done, that I just find it really interesting. So, like, now you're an agent. Like, how did you make that transition?
Well, that's definitely something I think people don't realize how much goes into it. And it's the same in the show horse world, whether it's the farrier, the feed company, shavings company, things you don't even think about. But transitioning to being an agent, I was in Texas as an assistant, and I was actually dating a jockey at the time. And he wasn't having a lot of success down there, so we sort of sat down together and thought that he would do better in Minnesota at Canterbury because it's sort of a smaller track with fewer jockeys, so more opportunities for him. And I never really liked Texas, so I was sort of happy to move forward anyway. And there was no agents up here that were available, so we thought, oh, I'll just do it myself. What's funny is we ended up breaking up about a month into being here, and we still work together. So it's kind of interesting to navigate that coworker
dynamic.
But
sounds complicated.
but I really enjoyed it because it's a really social job.
Hey, you got the hookup on racehorses
now. Exactly.
No?
and I get my horse time in the afternoons with you all.
Yeah.
But for me being like, when I was training or assistant training, whatever, I found it very like emotionally draining because there's, you know, it's hard. You get attached to these horses and you have to deal with the, you know, dark side of things, if you will, the injuries and the stress and the disagreements. And it's really kind of hard because most owners are not, you know, big, bad, money-hungry people by any stretch. And a lot of them do it because they love it. They love the game. And, you know, the horses are investments. They want to protect their investment. It makes sense to do the best care possible if you're spending that amount of money. But I think the hard part about things for me was a lot of, like, the emotional and, like, mental stress that came. It's a lot of responsibility. And so I sort of like being an agent better because I don't have all of that on my plate.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's hard, like, when you do start to feel that way. It just isn't fun anymore. It's not enjoyable. Well, it's just stressful.
And not everybody in at the track starts out as, like, the six-year-old girl that loved riding horses.
Right.
You know, so that's how, that was my background. I came in as the weird horse girl, whereas, you know, some other people are, you know, generational race trackers.
Right. It's like any discipline, really, where you have, like, the people who are born into it, and then you have, like, the random girl who grew up in a suburb, and you're like, I like horses.
Exactly. And that was me.
Where did you grow up?
So I'm from New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Jersey. She's a Jersey girl.
You don't got an accent.
No, only when I'm
drinking. She sounds Southern, I think.
Yeah. I spend so much time in the South.
And she says things like, I'm fixing to do this. I'm like, excuse me?
It's just the most accurate word I can describe.
But we hung out with the Canadians who were here. Shout out to the Canadians.
Love them.
Yeah, love them, miss them. And now she says A.
Well, Liz and I talked about this with the Canadians, how we wanted to start saying A, and Liz was like, just start saying it.
Yeah.
And now she says it A.
You do say y'all a lot, actually.
Oh, I think, you know what? So I haven't lived in New Jersey for 8 years, I think it is.
I do think sometimes your words get like a little that like whiny Jersey sound.
Annoying?
No, I don't think it's annoying. It's just like the tone of your voice changes.
Yeah, my high pitched voice.
But it's okay. It affects us all, our voices. So can you, for people who don't know anything about racing or race horses, can you walk us through like a typical day at the races? What happens?
Okay, so say it is Saturday at Canterbury Park. So the track opens at 6 o'clock. Typically people will get there around 5, an hour earlier. It's early mornings and the hours are pretty tough on people, but get there at 5 o'clock, and the horses will all get their stalls done. Some people will feed them a little bit first thing, but usually people feed after they train. But get there in the morning, you know, clean all the stalls, groom all the horses, and then the track opens. They'll go on the track and they'll gallop or jog or they'll breeze with a jockey, so some form of exercise. And then they come in, they get their bath, and then afterwards they'll get groomed again after their bath and done up or any type of special attention that they need. And then they get fed their lunch, wait a few hours. Everyone comes back at 3 p.m, comes back to feed, do their stall, everything. And then on a race day in the afternoons, when they come back, they'll get their Lasix 4 hours before, they run.
And what's that for?
So that's an anti-bleeding medication. So most racehorses...
But, like, for someone who has no idea what that is, like, what is bleeding? Like, so bleeding, why do they do that?
So for racehorses, bleeding is typically happens at, like, a high-speed, high-stress exercise
but
or
like,
workout.
Literally, what is bleeding?
And in their lungs, they'll get hemorrhaging.
Mm-hmm.
So then they'll have blood in their lungs, which is bad, as it sounds. So they can bleed on a scale of 1 to 5... And
so it's like a lameness scale, but for bleeding.
Yeah, pretty much. And so Lasix is a diuretic. So it is an anti-bleeding medication. And there's other things that you can do to help the horses. But most horses don't bleed. But since you could make an argument that Lasix is performance enhancing because it's a diuretic.
But it's not illegal to use.
No, it is completely legal. It's either administered by the vet. There's a record of it. So when you enter your horse, and in the program for the bettors, it'll say if the horse is on Lasix or not. So everybody knows. There's no secrets or anything. But that gets done 4 hours before
the race.
Before the race. And they actually just started something in a lot of the two-year-old races in Kentucky and such where they're phasing Lasix out.
It's interesting because it doesn't have any effect on bleeding in humans, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's different studies and just reasons and arguments. Just give it to, like, old
people with swollen legs to make them pee.
Yeah, so there's different... It's not known to be the most effective. There's other
things... Well, why are they phasing it out?
Well, there's certain people that are saying because of the dehydration properties of it that it's cool. Yeah. They don't use it in Europe for races.
Yep.
But the problem is, before Lasix was legal, there's other things that you can kind of do that are not very humane. So people will pull water and feed.
Like, they will dehydrate the horses, basically. Naturally. And that makes them not bleed?
Yeah, so...
That seems so weird, like, to dehydrate a horse.
Well, now, these are not things that have been backed up by science, necessarily. Yeah.
I feel like the logic behind that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but it's sort interesting. I mean, people do... Or not people. Horses do lose a lot of weight if you... At some tracks, we weigh them before, which is just...
The horses?
Yeah, which is super interesting, I always think, just for curiosity. And I wish we could weigh them after, because you'll notice right after they run, they lose so much weight, you know, water weight, or because it's really, really a lot of exertion.
So tight and sexy after they've run.
Yeah. Yeah. So at a race, like, how many horses usually run in a race? Like, 10?
At Canterbury. Yeah, I would say at Canterbury, the average field size is probably 8.
So because we event, like, we're really familiar with flare strips. Out of every race, if there's 8 horses, is there even one?
Maybe one.
One? So, like, one out of every 8?
So, there actually, like, is science behind those about the breeding.
They're based out of Minnesota.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some trainers that use them. I think that's something that...
It's, like, still a little voodoo, probably, on the track.
Well, sometimes people can be resistant to change and unfamiliar things. But I like the flare strip. Excuse me. I've used them before. Now, do I think it's, like, the difference between winning and not winning? No. But anything that can help them recover quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's important, too. Yeah, it might not make you win, but it's going to be better for your horse in the long run. Yeah.
So 4 hours before, you're shooting them up with Lasix per the vet's recommendation.
Maybe putting a flare strip on 30 minutes before the race.
Then what happens?
So you give them their Lasix, and then just... So then you just try to keep them calm and... Let them rest before their race, and then about 40 minutes before the race, you bring them to the holding barn, which is sort of a new thing, so it's one of the ways that we prevent cheating. There's some medications that take maybe an hour to be detectable in a horse.
Okay.
So if you go to the test barn after you race, you know, you get the urine samples, so... If you were a trainer looking to cheat and you were giving them something as they were walking to the race, the holding barn is a place where everybody's observed for about 15 minutes before they walk over. So that's one of the ways that we actually eliminate cheating. So just they're under supervision for a bit longer.
Yep.
And some tracks have cameras in all the barns.
Is cheating common?
Yeah, I was going to say, do people cheat a lot? Like,
so
still?
It's kind of tricky. I almost want to say it's like, what is your definition of cheating? So there's... If you will.
It's true. What are your morals?
Well, you know, first of all, there's straight up illegal substances, and then there's pushing the envelope, which is something that's legal within... So most medications have a withdrawal time, sort of similar to the show horses. You can't give bute, what, I don't know, 3 days before. 12 hours. Yeah. Whatever it is. So there's a guideline, and it's tricky because certain horses metabolize things quicker than others. So there's some medications where, say, the guidelines say 24 out, and you give it exactly 24 hours out, and your horse metabolizes it very slowly. Is that cheating if you get the positive test? I don't know. Technically, maybe, because it was a positive.
Right.
But there are some trainers that will say, well, the guideline says 24 hours, but you can give it at 18 hours, and it won't be detectable. So that's where I would say... Technically cheating, pushing the envelope. And then there's, you know, you have the Jason Service and Jorge Navarro situation where they were giving...
Oh, that is.
They're both in jail right now for giving banned substances, performance-enhancing drugs to their horses.
Did their horses die?
Well, they had a few, but they were caught through wiretapes. There was a whole FBI investigation.
The FBI?
Do they have a...
Yeah, they got barn raided.
Episode on it on Netflix?
Not
like
yet.
The jumper? Yeah. Like the guy who killed the horses?
Wow.
So, I don't know. It's hard because it's an old business with so much money. So, you know, you have people that just want to win at all costs. But right. I would say for the most part, in my experience, I would say 90% of people, this is what they've done their whole lives. This is what their family's done. And they love racing. They love the business. And they're not out here trying to cheat.
Right. They just want to be fair and be competitive. Exactly. Fairly.
And if you have and 9 times out of 10, if you have the best, most expensive, well-bred horse, that's what's going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what always makes me a little bit curious about Bob Baffert is he has these best million-dollar horses, you know.
Why are you enhancing them or doing whatever it is you're doing?
You know what I mean? It's sort of like you already have, and I understand, you know, then you have the pressure to win because you are supposed to. But it's like, is it worth it? I don't know.
I would say not.
Exactly.
Because I wouldn't consider myself well-versed in racing, and I definitely know what he's in trouble for.
Yeah, and I think that in life, when there's smoke, there's fire. So if there's patterns and things don't add up,
yeah,
you know, it's not my position to call one thing or another, but
okay. Yeah. So back to the timeline. You may or may not have cheated in the holding.
All right, so you're in the holding barn, you're under supervision.
This is a long day.
It is a long day. You'll never sleep as good as you do after a race day. So then you walk over to the saddling paddock where the public gets to view
the
horse.
That's where we can go and watch the horses go around.
So that's where the public gets to view the horse. You walk them around, and then they put the saddle on them. So everybody can see what they look like, how they're walking, how they're moving, behaving, if they're sweating or not, and seeming really anxious. So it's pretty cool. You put the saddle on the horse, and you meet with a jockey for, 2 minutes. You converse and make a game plan for the race, and then you leg up the rider. They go out into the post-parade.
Riders up!
Yes, riders up! And then they go out into the post-parade, warm up for 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
I like when I'm hanging out with you in the evening and I get the little... And it's 15 minutes to race time.
The bugler, call to post. Yeah, he's pretty good here too. And then we load him in the gate.
And that's something that requires practice, I'm assuming, right?
Listen, I were talking about this the other day. My biggest surprise when I was learning how to gallop is that the gate's really not a big deal.
Oh.
Most of the time, there are some horses that act up in it, but for breaking the babies, I remember the first time they were like, all right, we're going to take the babies to the gate for the first time. And I was like, we're going to what?
You're like, I don't want to do
that. We're all going to die. And they don't really, it's really not that big of a deal. It's pretty quiet and low key. So it's actually a non-issue. And I feel like in all horse movies, they like to make it out to be the biggest problem.
I feel like Seabiscuit taught me something else.
What was the movie we watched?
Rock My Heart.
Rock My Heart on Netflix. Did you see that?
Yeah. No. It was pretty
good.
It's based in Germany, but they have English dubbing over it or whatever. I do love me a dubbed movie. And it's cute. It's actually cute. It's mostly realistic. As realistic as horse movies get. The worst part was when she broke out of the gate and she didn't have a stirrup because her horse was scared because it had never been in a gate, which if you watch the movie, you'll see. And then so she breaks out the gate and she's late and she's got a problem. So she stops her horse as all the other horses are galloping.
And that literally happened to me once. I told you today.
Yeah. And she's just standing there, gets her stirrup and then takes her inhaler out. It's taking 10 minutes to do this. And then, of course, she goes and races and whatever, the whole thing. I'm like, I don't know any racehorse that would bust out of the gate and then just stand there.
And then just pull up.
Just let you get your stirrup.
Yeah, that's a bad racehorse.
I don't think you're going
to
win.
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, so to win the race, the jockey has to be on top of the horse. So that's the rules.
Oh, you can't fall off it.
You cannot fall off it, and the horse is not. So there was this one situation, I think it was in New York, where the rider had a heart attack or an aneurysm on top of the horse. Died.
Oh.
On top of the horse, and they're right in front of the wire. So the horse crossed the wire with the body. It was dead. The jockey was dead.
But he was on it.
I
say it counts.
It counted.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's epic.
That's a fun fact. I don't know if it's fun or not, but yeah, he died during the race.
Oh,
what a great way to die.
And better than getting crashed and dying.
Well, could you imagine if he fell off and the horse won? Then you would not get any money. So.
Yeah. I mean, that guy got to literally die doing what he loved.
Die a winner, literally. Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting story.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Okay, so then they go into the gate, they go out of the gate, race the race. How do they literally, like, stop the horses? Like, they just pull them up and they just, like, trot. Like, because I feel like when I haven't gone to that many races, but they, like, trot, I feel like, kind of past everybody. And then the winner goes to the winner's circle and then everyone just, like, goes back to the barn. And
so the horses are pretty smart. They know where the wire is. So usually after the race, and they're tired. So once they can feel, when you're galloping to pull the horse up, it's a lot of, like, shifting in your body weight. Yep. You can't out-muscle them with the bit and the reins, but you just sort of shift your body weight back, and they know. There are some outriders, so, like, on the rare occasion where you can't pull your horse up, the outriders will pick you up.
And they just go and gallop next to you and then literally grab the reins and pull them.
Yeah,
grab you by the rein.
So. Didn't you see was that the Kentucky Derby where the
outrider
was getting pulled? I had a hell of a time there.
Horse was, like, attacking them.
Yeah, so, actually, ponying can be pretty sketchy if you're, like...
Well, what's the difference in ponying and outriding? Isn't it different?
The outrider is, like, the referees of the track, so the pony people are the ones who'll guide them in the post-parade, and typically the outriders won't actually be hooked up to a horse in the post-parade unless there's a problem. But the outriders are sort of like the referees, making sure everything's okay.
If there's, like, a rogue horse
or someone falls off, they'll catch it. Or if one of the racehorses is being...
Fun.
Yeah. So
I mean, would it be?
They like it. They love catching them. It is fun, I think, when you... Mostly they just sort of, like, you know, are watching and observing and making sure everything's going smoothly and directing traffic, if you will. But so afterwards, say you win the race. A lot of tracks, if you win or run second, you go to the test barn, which is where you cool your horse out and get the urine sample, and they take blood. And then a lot of tracks, they'll also choose a random horse. Like, so maybe if there's a 14-horse field, they'll randomly pick it. So whatever random horse you are, and the first two finishers will all go to the test barn where they cool out for a little bit and then get... urine samples and blood samples.
Is it true that they teach them to pee on command by whistling?
Oh, here's a funny one. So, if you see a horse peeing, people, like, whistle to try to get it to associate.
Yeah.
But I don't... They don't really pee on command, though. I actually can't whistle, so I usually made, like, a weird owl noise, and they all make fun of me.
Can we hear it?
But I don't know how to whistle. But what's funny is, so I'm in Oklahoma at Remington Park, and we're in the test barn. And they had these buckets, like these gallon buckets full of water, the red Solo cup in them. And they wanted you to plunge the cup into the bucket and pour the water into the big bucket of water to, like, the noise of peeing, to, like, stimulate pee. I was like, this is not real. We are not really doing this. But usually, like, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been on a run and you kind of have to pee afterwards. So I think usually it's just,
I have had to take some trips to the woods on runs.
Okay, so I think it's, like, athletic
for a variety of reasons. Yeah.
gets things moving.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually why they pee. Not really the whistling. People do whistle, but I don't know how to whistle, so.
Well.
And they still gave me a job at the track. No, it's whoo, hoo,
hoo. I like that. I'm going to make my pee noise.
I'm whistling. You're hooing.
You're whistling badly. You're supposed to whistle the noise that I'm making.
How do I do that? High or low? I can only whistle really high.
Well, that's the whistle noise now. I would not make the pee. Like I said, I don't know how to whistle. And they still hired me.
Wow.
What's your favorite thing about the horse racing industry?
It's sort of twofold. Definitely when you win, there's no better feeling.
Yeah.
So much fun to cheer. But since racing is such a sport of highs and lows, as all horses are, I would say on the average day, I love in the morning just watching training and hearing the hoofbeats galloping across the track. It's just really amazing. And the sunrise, every morning, the early hours are worth it when you just have the best sunrise in the world. And you're watching And you're just watching these amazing animals gallop across the track. And I think that's probably the best reason to do it, because the wins don't come every day, but those horses are there.
What time do you get up every day?
Now that I'm an agent, I used to get up at 3:50 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, now that I'm an agent, I can sort of slack a little bit, and sometimes I'll show up as late as 7 in the morning.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Rebel.
But usually my alarm goes off between 5 and 5:30, and...
Oh, my God. That's my worst nightmare.
Seriously.
Yeah. Naps
you
are
do that, too.
Trainer naps are very...
Well, they make her do that.
I couldn't do that every day, in no way. Mm. If there is one thing about the industry you could change, what would it be?
So I could say cheating or the treatment of horses, but something that I think, and that's not common or the norm, I should say, but something that people don't talk about is, I would say, the treatment of injured jockeys. It's a real big issue, especially in the United States with the way health insurance is. But here,
every time a jockey gets seriously injured or hurt, you see a GoFundMe pop up for them, and mm-hmm. we have to raise money for them and their surgeries and their rehabs. And I think that's so wrong. I think that they shouldn't have to worry about that getting paid for. In Europe, everything gets paid for. Rehab, they'll get paid as if you know, they were still riding, I'm pretty sure. I don't know the specifics. But this is the most dangerous sport, and they're putting their lives on the line. And I just think it's really, really sad that if they get injured, which is common.
Right.
I think it's really sad that they have to worry about that, and that we have to make a GoFundMe to try to help them through. I think that's tragic.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's common with a lot of, like, high-risk sports is people don't have insurance, and yeah. they need a GoFundMe when they get hurt.
And the tracks are supposed to pay. You know, they say they'll pay.
But they don't.
And maybe they do to a degree, but what happened in Texas not too long ago is this jockey got hurt in a race, and the tracks... health insurance was really, really specific, and all the doctors in the area weren't in the plan, so they wouldn't operate on him, and he had blood in one eye and was dizzy, like, could have gone blind, and nobody would operate on him because he wasn't in the tracks
insurance. It wasn't insured in the area or whatever.
And that's crazy to me. That shouldn't even be something that you have to worry about, and maybe that's a wider issue or whatever, but...
That sounds like politics.
But, yeah. you know, period of the story, if you get hurt in a race, you know, when you're putting your life on the line, I just think that you should have more support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if you get hurt, period, you should have support mm-hmm. and not need a GoFundMe.
Exactly. But. And it's just really sad to me because, you know, they have organizations like the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund and this and that, but, you know, it's not unusual for jockeys to die. It's not unusual for them to be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life. Ugh. And it's just really, really sad that we have to make these GoFundMes.
Yeah. And they're gainfully employed. It's not like they're just sucking off the teat of the government. Like, they're employed.
Exactly. Right. They're working hard. And what's interesting is a lot of people think jockeys make a lot of money, and some of them do. So the best jockeys in the country make over $1 million a year easily, probably over 2 or 3 million.
Even that is nothing.
But
what's nothing compared to like what NFL people make and like.
Okay. But if you're,
I don't make anywhere near.
Well, if you're a struggling jockey, you might maybe make, you know, 30,000 a year if you're really struggling.
Which honestly, compared to everyone else in America, is not that bad. Sadly.
Yeah, but, you know, for that... exactly. For that amount of risk, and then, you know, you're not... Because they make a little bit of money for riding the race itself. Jock's mounts are usually $75, and then that gets 25% to the agent, and then 10% to their valet.
But, $75?
So, to enter the starting gate on a horse. So then if they win...
So they're getting paid basically $75 to do the ride.
To bare minimum, yeah.
But then if they win, they get a percentage.
Yes. So really they only, especially the smaller tracks where the purses aren't as big, they really are only making money if they win.
Wow.
So it's...
Yeah. $75 does not sound worth that risk for most.
Exactly. So I think a lot
of... But it's a passion.
It is a passion. Yeah. And a lot of them have a certain personality type, I would say, which is more of a, you know, risk-taking personality. It takes a certain personality type to want to do it.
Yeah.
Fun fact, I wanted to be a jockey, and my sixth grade teacher told me I was too big.
Oh. Well, how tall are you?
And I've had an eating disorder since.
My body determined that was
why. They have jockeys that are like 5'8 and 5'9, and you've never seen a skinnier leg in your life.
What's the Victoria's Secret song? Can't have carbs in a hot girl summer.
Yeah, that's
so
my
Rye Eckleberry is like the best jockey at Canterbury here.
Rye, that's how I named my horse. The track.
Really?
Yeah, because that's who his jockey was.
He's very good. He's very good. And he's... So I asked him, because he's like 5'8", 5'9", and I asked him one day, because his legs are like twigs. And I asked him one day, I'm like, what do you eat like on race day? And he's like...
Carrots.
I have one egg in the morning.
One egg.
He's like, and my wife works for Airbon, and they sell supplements, and I have, like, a bit tea or whatever it was.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
How much Lasix does he take?
There's no telling. I know jockeys who've done that. That's a real thing, like, eating disorders among jockeys, so...
I would believe it if you have to weigh 100 pounds.
Yeah. So, you know, the...
I know.
They call it flipping, but it's bulimia. A lot of flipping. They call it flipping. If you're a guy and you're a jockey, it's not bulimia.
I mean, yeah, you can't say
flipping.
You have bulimia.
Some guys struggle with it more than others, but it's hard. It's hard to be that light.
Yeah. How light do they have to be?
T- depends on the race. I would say on average, maybe like 116, 117. Well, because their saddles are different weights as well, so.
So I only have to lose 38 pounds.
Yeah. I wanted to be a jockey for a week.
I have to lose like 100. And
then I was like, no, not worth it. Yeah. I commit carbicide way too much to be a jockey.
What does that mean I sent you today?
Oh, I'm a carby girl in the carby
world. It was like, hot girls can't eat carbs. yeah, we can. Have you had a favorite horse in your career that you've raced or represented or ridden or what?
So I think my favorite horse that I ever worked with was when I was an assistant for Steve Margolis. Great guy. One of the most ethical, wonderful trainers I've ever met. He's just so wonderful. I can't say enough good things about him.
Where was this?
We were in Churchill in Louisville, Kentucky, and then in New Orleans. So we had this horse, and her name was She's on the Warpath. Mm. And it was a perfect name because she was the most evil horse. She was so, so mean, and she was really, really tough to ride. She was just a tough girl, you know? She was so awesome. She was a badass, for lack of a better term. And she
like,
was
tough in a good way.
Very, very tough. And she wasn't the prettiest, and she kind of winged her leg when she galloped. She wasn't the prettiest girl in the barn, but she was just so, so tough. And her jockey was Chantel Sutherland, a girl rider. And so it just was a lot of girl power. And she would win these stake races. And she was just so, so tough and gritty. And the effort was just so awesome. I remember there was this one week when I was walking down the barn and she bit me on my arm. And I was black and blue for like 3 weeks. She bit me so hard. I've never been bit so hard in my life. And then she won the race a few days later. And I was like, well, if that's a sacrifice I have to make. Yeah. But she was just so tough. She was so awesome. She was smart. She loved running. She loved competing.
Do you like fillies or colts better?
I think when I was riding and working alongside them, I would probably say the fillies. The colts are just kind of big and dumb most of the times. But the fillies are
like
more sense.
You know, mares.
Exactly. It was sort of that same thing. All of my favorite horses, I think, that I've worked with have been fillies.
Are most of the race horses gelded or not?
Yeah, most of them are. You know, some owners will have, you know, dreams that they might have the next stallion. But, mm-hmm. you know, say if you're American Pharoah and you breed over 100, 200 mares a year, and they're, you know, not 200 of your progeny are not going to all become stallions.
My racehorse, my thoroughbred's by Secretariat.
Exactly. Oh, man.
Aren't they all?
Yeah, there's a lot of inbreeding. But
when you look at a pedigree and it's got like the highlighted
it's
names.
Line, it's like called line breeding when it works. It's line bred.
When it works. But when
no,
it doesn't
most
work.
Most of them are gelded, especially after they're two years old. Because sometimes, like, this is like kind of vulgar, but it's just the fact, like, people think, like, if they're like testicles are too large that they walk kind of wide and they get in the way when they're running.
I can see that.
Or sometimes they just won't focus. So there's a lot of benefits. And then I've always been, my opinion's been, if their daddy's alive, they don't need nets.
Ah,
you
fair.
Know, breed another one of them. Yeah. So.
Is it true that all thoroughbred racehorses have to be bred live cover?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not just a myth.
Not a myth. So true. I remember when I went to my first breeding, I couldn't believe how loud it was. I was like, whoa! This is so crazy.
Can you demonstrate what it sounds like?
Well,
just kidding.
You don't
have to.
But, so quarter horses can do AI and
racing
quarter horses.
Insemination.
Yeah.
Artificial
so
intelligence.
What's interesting is if you're a real anti-thoroughbred racing person, they like to say, oh, all the kill pens are filled with thoroughbreds, but that's actually not true. Like 80% are like the stock breeds. But
right.
So we limit the amount of breedings because we're live cover.
Right. Like they can literally
only
breed
200.
And then I think part of it is also because we have different state bred programs. So if you're a Louisiana bred, you get extra money for...
Same with Minnesota bred. I know that.
Yeah.
Minnesota bred horses get extra money.
For running in the Minnesota bred races. Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, part of that is coming with the live cover because of the way that breeding programs are. Huh.
We thought Beretta may have experienced a live cover.
I heard. Yeah. I heard.
Well, and then Brady did do an ultrasound. Well, and he realized that she was, like, stitched. What's that called? A cast lick?
Yeah. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, she's definitely not pregnant because it wouldn't literally fit in there.
It was not. Well, what's funny is I remember so.
But she never even raced.
You do that with all the 2-year-olds typically in training because they'll suck.
The wind suck or whatever.
Yeah, they'll wind suck and you can hear it.
With their machines?
Yes, you can hear them sucking in the air.
Oh.
Well, what's really funny is I had
they queef?
Oh, no, no, wait, this is what's funny. So I told my my vet was sewing up some of the vaginas, and I was like, this is like getting rid of the queefing ability. He goes, it would be reverse queefing, technically. And then I called him a vagina artist.
And he was a vagine.
Also, another job at the track I had no idea existed is the vagina
sewing vagine.
Exactly. There. So, yeah, so most of them get the
mares, the
guys
fillies.
Get castrated, and all the fillies
get stitched.
It's like a husband stitch. That they do to women.
I was gonna say it's like
female genital mutation.
Yeah, mutilation. Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can actually hear them sucking in the air.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Poor Barrett. You,
it's like a winking sound. Like seriously, like
does winking make a sound?
Yes. Have you ever heard a mare wink?
Oh, you mean a mare?
Not like an eye. Not an eye like, wink.
I think you have another something wrong body with your voice. Eyes if you're making sounds when you wink.
This is going to be rated PG-13.
Yeah. Children, episode. Tune out.
Yeah, I have lots of good vet stories at the track. I'll tell you what, the track vets are pretty skilled because they just do such a variety of things because if they're sick, you know, they just, the track vets work hard. That's a hard
job. Well, that, like, leads into our next question, which is what is the worst injury that you've seen for a horse and a rider? Not combined, but one and then the other. Or combined.
I don't think the horses on the track get injured.
Never.
Never, ever. Let's see. The worst injury I've seen for a horse that I've seen personally... in all my time...
Or that you've heard about.
Oh, well, I've heard about some pretty nasty stuff. But I'll just go with my own personal horse. So I had this one horse in training, and she'd bowed a tendon when she was younger, and we rehabbed it, gave her a year of turnout, you know, did everything you're supposed to do to rehab it, and we brought her back into racing, and she was completely sound and fine and great. You know, they do a pre-race exam. The vets... check everything, so she was doing great, nice horse, and then this was in Dallas a year ago. She was racing and she rebowed because I guess with bowed tendons you worry about them rebowing above
in
or
a
below.
Different place,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And she bowed so bad, and I remember the ambulance ride back to the barn with her, and we had to put this weird like metal brace on her leg to load her in the van. And, you know, I'm sitting in the van ride with her back, and she's just screaming and thrashing around. Oh. And it's really loud. The horse ambulance there was real loud, and it was terrible. And I was just sitting there crying next to her. And it was just really, really awful. I actually contemplated after that night, like, you know, if I wanted to do this or not. Because I was the first, you know, I'd had horses get injuries and stuff.
Yeah,
but I'd never had
like
a horse
sad.
Break down and get van home in the race. And it just broke my heart. And luckily, you know, she was okay because, you know, she just rebowed, so she's totally fine, able to live out her life. I've never put down a horse that I had worked with.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I take pride in my care and all that, and that was really hard for me, though, that I just remember that ambulance ride back, and I remember really having that conversation with myself of,
do I want to do this?
You know, because it just broke my heart. You know,
yeah.
I love them. You know, you do the best you can, and they still get injured. And it was just really heartbreaking for me.
Sad.
Yeah, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, it does happen. And like I said, you know, you can do the best that you can and still have things happen. But I think what sort of got me through that is knowing, you know, I'm in this with the best of intentions and with the care of the horse and the love of the horse in my mind. And, you know, racing needs people like that. So.
Yeah.
Oh,
that got me through
sad.
It. But in terms of jockeys, I mean, I have close friends who's, you know, I know people who've died in races, but...
Jeez.
I believe it was Texas.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty bad injury. Dying.
That's a bad injury, yeah, right?
One of the worst.
Yeah.
But actually, what's really horrible is a kid named Bryce in Texas had a starting gate accident, I believe, this past week. in the morning, and I don't know the specifics, but he's having his leg amputated. Ugh,
that's so sad.
Where can we find his GoFundMe?
He does have a GoFundMe, unfortunately. Bryson Bordio? I'm butchering the name.
We'll put it in the notes.
Yeah.
Put it in the podcast notes if you want to donate.
But, I mean, it breaks my heart because, you know, you're as an athlete, to lose your leg is... Yeah, that's a career-ending.
Yeah. And it's not just career-ending, it's life-changing.
It's life-changing, and you know, it's something that we take for granted. I mean, I've had some injuries from... I broke my finger and had surgery on my finger from riding. I dislocated my shoulder. You know, I've had spills, and everybody gets hurt, and everybody has spills, and you take it for granted that when you go out and get on 12 racehorses a day in the morning and then ride in the afternoon, and it can all be over in the blink of an eye, which is... You know, I think something that we have to remember, but not think about.
Well, or I think it's hard, like, when something happens. Like, you get kicked, or, like, something that's, like, not even that bad happens, because you get, like, everybody gets casual. And, like, something happens, and you're like, oh, my God, I literally, like, I've been standing in a slightly different position, could have been killed. And it knocks the fear of God right back into you, and you're like, all right, I'm going to be a little more aware. You know, but that, again, only lasts so long, and then you get casual again.
Exactly.
So it's like just trying to stay on top of it and being not casual.
Well, something that's kind of funny is before I ever worked at the track and I ever galloped, I think I was a lot more bold in my like show horse riding, you know, or less, you know. And once I started working at the track and I saw injuries and I saw a lot of stuff, I've become much more cautious and aware of what can go wrong because, you know, life is precious and life is short. And
right. And you only got one.
You only got one, and you can never forget that.
Yeah. Okay, if you could do anything with horses, like anything, what would it be?
I think that probably like to start, I'd like to do the media side of things.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Like so, for what discipline?
Maybe probably racing, just because it's what I know best. But there's a lot of different opportunities for the media or the paddock hosts. So I always thought that would be something that I'd be interested in doing and analyzing the horses and being a public handicapper. Something in that vein.
What does that mean?
So a lot of the paddock hosts, they'll talk about the horses and which ones they've picked to win or and why. So I just thought that would be something that would be interesting for me because I've never done anything like it. So
it'd be something fun to try.
Yeah, something I would like to do, be interested in that I haven't.
So it's like a sportscast?
Yeah, a sports host. Yeah, same exact thing.
You can do. You've got the face for that.
Or my voice.
Oh man, I think my voice is annoying. But yeah, so I'd like to do that. I did a little interview.
So like when people go to the track and they bet on the horses and the horses have the odds, like how does that all work? Like, can you explain that a little? Like, how do I go to the track and win?
So horse racing is pari-mutuel wagering, which means you don't bet against the house. You sort of bet against the other players.
Okay.
So how it works is we have live odds. So they're constantly changing based on
the bets that are coming
where
in.
Where the money's going. So if the public is betting a horse and it's a sure thing, it'll almost be like an even money favorite. But in general, you know, you can do a simple win bet, which you pick that horse to finish first place. Or you do a win place
show or whatever.
Yeah, win place show. So the place is second and show is third. They have exotic bets like a trifecta, superfecta, which is a certain number of horses in a certain order. But in general, for, like, new bettors, the easiest thing to do is win, place, show. And then you sort of look at their past performances as the best way to do it. See how the horse has been running. Has it been doing good? At what distance? What surface? At what level?
And the, like, closer the numbers are together, the better the odds, basically, right? Like, if they're 2-1, that's better than 5-1.
In terms of the likelihood of it winning, yeah. So a 2-1... is like a 50% chance of it winning. So if you get lucky and get a long shot, you make more money if you bet the 20-1.
Yeah.
You know, because then it pays out a lot more. So I always try to find that long shot, you know, that's going to win. And you do that sort of by seeing, you know, what in the past performances, was there a mistake in the last race? Like, do they have an excuse? Do they look really good in the paddock now? Do they change trainers, surfaces, levels, etc.?
I like looking at them in the paddock.
Yeah,
I think that's fun.
I can get a good sense for how they're looking.
And I think you sort of get an appreciation for all that goes into it because they'll be in the paddock looking all beautiful. Some trainers braid, and I think you just get to see the best turned out horses.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just athletes.
Yeah. They're nice specimens.
Yeah. So I think that takes us up to our saddle sores.
Yeah. So every episode we do a segment called Saddle Sores, where we come up with something that bothers us or annoys us or chaps you, so to speak. It's a saddle
sore. Gives you a saddle sore.
Easy. I would just say people.
People? Yeah, that's a good one.
People, can relate.
People who are down on racing without understanding. Because
it gets a little bit of a bad rap.
It does. And you know what? I'll be the first to say it is a controversial sport. Racing is hard on the horses. After they retire, they will never do anything as difficult again. It is hard on them. It is tough on them. But they're bred to do it, and they love it. You can't make a horse that doesn't want to run, run. We give those away to show homes.
Right. Berry!
You know? So I think, especially the off-the-track thoroughbred owners that, you know, talk down on racing, you'd never have your horse if it wasn't.
Right.
The Jockey Club does so much research for horses, and the racing industry has so much good, and if you just go to the track one day or go visit a trainer's barn, because most of those trainers will say, if you don't like racing, come to my barn. Let me show you what we do.
Well, and I think that's important in any industry. You're going to have the bad trainers and you're going to have the bad riders and the bad people. But there's also a lot of very good people out there.
And I've been fortunate enough to work for some really amazing people, and all the trainers that I've ever worked with, you know, they'd put their money where their mouth is. If someone said, I don't like racing, they would say, come to my barn in the morning. Come see what we do. Come see how we take care of them. And if you sit there and you go through the day with us and at the end of that you still think it's bad, then you know what? Okay, fine. But I think that most people would change their minds.
My saddle sore, I'm going to take this one.
That's fine.
Is when people mess up when they're cantering, whether they're transitioning or actually cantering, and then they promptly walk.
Yeah, like they can't get the canter, and you're like, no, correct it, go, come on.
Yeah.
And they just stop.
And then they just stop.
Oh, wait, we're just doing any horse saddle sore?
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't have to be racing.
That is racing.
Yours was a good one, but it drives me absolutely insane. I'm like, why are you walking?
I would say people talking back to trainers during lessons.
Yes.
I think that's insane. You're paying money to be improved upon, and you're not going to be receptive to it.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
But the walking.
Bonkers.
The walking. Oh, I hate the walking.
What about when dogs run through your lesson?
I hate when the dogs come barking down the driveway. It's desensitization. I would have to say, I mean, running a business and, like, working hard for a very long time to have made, like, Liz Lund Eventing, Liz Lund Equestrian, Copeland Farms, I do get really annoyed at all of the kids who are their name eventing, but they're not professionals.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just their Instagram page for their horse pictures, and then they have their other page for their friend pictures, and it's, like, these two different lives. Like, I'm sorry. I did try doing that at one point, whatever.
Make Liz famous 2K15.
Yeah, but that was Liz Lund Eventing all the way. If this is what you want to do, there is no personal life, business life. Like it is Liz Lund Equestrian. It's not Liz Lund private life for only my private friends, because what two people would like?
you don't like the Hannah Montana of Instagram?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, or, you know, like, I get that they want somewhere to have their horse pictures, but, like, if this is actually what you want to do and make it your business, then it's your life. Like, you live and breathe this. Like, this isn't just a job you go to 9 to 5 Monday through Friday.
I think this is your life. I think there's a Lex and Clancy out there somewhere.
If your quote unquote regular friends have no interest in your horse life,
they ain't your friends.
Kill them.
Yeah,
drown them. Wait, you guys have regular friends?
Yeah, that's what I said. I think I have two regular friends.
I don't have any.
I have a handful.
The only one I can name is Maria. But there's got to be a second one out there.
There has to be more. I mean, my regular
friends. My volleyball friends.
I don't think they really care what I'm doing, but they'll still like my horse pose.
Yeah, they're like, cool. It looks majestic. Yeah. I like its blue eye.
Yeah. Or they'll text me and be like, that little white one you ride is the most beautiful horse.
Beretta is the most majestic, even though she looks pregnant.
Yeah. So that's a good one. All of them are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that wraps it up, and we will do an update in like 4 months. So we are going to do something, I think, like, well, we have these periods where maybe we can't podcast together. We're going to start reading to you guys, probably on our own, journal entries. Like, I have an old...
What?
I have an old blog that is just epic. So, like, I'm just going to, like... What is it, like, where you go into the front of the room and, like, read your poem? Like, that's what I'm going to do.
We're going to do, like, poetry slams.
Yeah. But it's going to be our blog.
I do want for Cynthia. Yeah.
I do want to be there for live feedback, though.
Yeah, it is pretty funny.
Because some of my old, like, journal entries regarding Are these horse-related epic.
Only? Like, oh, we're not reading the non-horse.
No.
See, that's what I was thinking.
That would be super cringy.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be pretty bad.
Mine would be like, I had a crush on Kevin.
Yeah.
Don't tell my mom.
I mean, my horse ones are pretty
cringy. Never Have I Ever?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just epic. You gotta watch it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah. My horse ones are pretty cringy too, so.
Yeah.
Mine would literally go
over my entire course and be like, I had 4 refusals, but we kicked on and we made it happen.
I fell off 4 times, but we got it done.
Yeah. So I guess on that note, we will see you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.